The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
McKechin, Ben McKechin.
And I'm his personal money penny, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 37 of The Big Picture for the week beginning November 8th and our first show on air. More on that later. But this week, Bond, Bond, Bond. We've got the latest on the latest Bond film, Spectre.
We're also going to delve back into the Bond archive, Mark, to take a fresh look at the first 007.
Plus Shirley Bassey's spy movie mashups and the top five Bond gadgets you need now.
All right, all ahead in the show.
Well, actually, before we get going, we should probably acknowledge that this is... Cue the music. Sorry, we're going to keep doing this because we paid $40 for this. Keep going.
Big finish.
This is our first show on air, so for all those Hope 103.2 listeners who are wondering what?
Thanks for joining us every Sunday night between 8 and 9. You're welcome.
And for the podcasters who have been following us for the last 6 months or so, thanks very much for hanging in there. In which case, and that is in case you did, hello guys, you guys, you're still there. Look, so welcome to The Big Picture, which is our Christian cultural insight into popular culture all around. And we're hoping you'll enjoy the show as much as we enjoy making it. But on to this week.
Yes.
Cue the additional music. Yes, just in case you didn't pick it up from all those previews, we've decided to make our first show on Hope 103.2 our Bond edition. Why? Well, because this week marks the release of the 24th Bond film with the latest and arguably craggiest gentleman spy, Daniel Craig. Craig.
I see what you did
there.
There
you go. MI6 operative originally created by Ian Fleming. He's not only one of the deadliest men to don a tuxedo, he's extremely profitable too. Since 1962, James Bond in all of his seven incarnations has delivered just over $11 billion in adjusted terms. And there's a firm chance that you'll be shelling out still more dollars when Spectre opens this Thursday. But what exactly will you be buying into? Well, that's where the big picture comes in. So this is the show that specializes and examining short stories behind the film and TV stories, the worldviews that shape our own world-renowned heroes. And so it's time for us to sort of unpack everything for this week.
Yes.
Except before we do...
Before we get to all of that and the Bond stuff...
The really expensive music. Yes, it's our cutting edge this week's segment.
Mate, we really should stop spending. We should really stop sparing no expense on our sound effects on the show.
There's probably no more sound effects for the rest of the season because we.
Mate,
just
before we get
budget.
To all the Bond stuff, there's a couple of things to bring everyone's attention to this week. At cinemas, vying with Spectre is a new documentary film called He Named Me Malala. This is about the young Pakistani schoolgirl. I'm sure most people remember she was shot by the Taliban a number of years ago, but she fully recovered and became an activist for the rights and education of Pakistani women around the world. So much so that she was actually a awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 2014. Malala Yousafzai, I think is how you pronounce it. Anyway, He Named Me Malala is at cinemas this week if you do not want to go and see Bond.
Yeah, actually, for something equally heavy on the ABC, obviously as parents, you know, people can be particularly concerned about sexual predators in our community. Well, The Pedophile Next Door is airing this Wednesday on ABC 2. Now, that's a documentary about the experiences in the UK struggling with the whole idea of UK legislation, which apparently is failing to protect children from sexual abuse. So, again, this documentary explores radical and controversial alternatives, maybe ones that should be applied in Australia. Something to be thoughtful about.
This week, going from something really serious that you were just talking about to seriously funny that's out on Blu-ray and DVD, the excellent Australian TV series Utopia. If you didn't see this on ABC TV, shame on you, and you should go and catch up with the seasons 1 and 2 of Utopia. If you like excellently funny satire set in an office all about government bureaucracy and infrastructure, Utopia is the show for you. Fantastic.
Now, I'll take your funny and raise you too. Thursday this week, starting on 8:30 p.m. on One, the digital channel One, the spin-off from Channel 10.
I know 10. Of this channel of which you
there
speak.
There you go. The Last Man on Earth. Okay, TV comedy series from the States.
Am I keen or what?
I know, this is actually going to be pretty cool. Phil Miller, the character's name, a man who in 2020 is the final survivor of a worldwide plague until he discovers the last woman, who also happens to be the final survivor of a worldwide plague. And basically, as I understand the storyline, she convinces him that she must marry him. He must marry her first before they're going to go about repopulating the planet, and which he proceeds to do, and then discovers there are actually one or two other people and she was just desperate to get married. Well, it's a Garden of Eden type story, okay, somehow with quirky happiness. Firstly, I'm tuning in. I hope you tune in too.
This week in entertainment news, everything is Bond, Bond, Bond. With Spectre coming out, industry analysts are reckoning it's going to come in a debuting at the US box office probably around the $80 million mark, which isn't too bad.
A paltry $80 million.
Given Skyfall, the last Bond outing, came in with $1.1 billion globally, yeah, I reckon $80 million is a fair assessment. Even though James Bond in the USA is going up against none other than Charlie Brown in the Peanuts movie, Mark.
Well, that's actually going to be pretty hard to cope with, because I know from a parental point of view, you'll be struggling, won't you?
Oh, you would be.
Okay, choosing. Am I going to take the kids to see a killer spy or a dog? I don't know. We'll see. Okay. Well, actually, everything in the show, forget Spectre for a moment, has been building up to this moment.
Yes.
The moment where in which I get to finally announce the first Pope Francis biopic. Francesco is set to hit the cinemas with Vatican approval this particular week, released on 700 Italian screens, so I bet that'll be pushing some of the market out. Francesco stars a young Argentinian actor, Rodrigo de la Serna, from The Motorcycle Diaries.
Oh, about that. Of course.
And he's
sure.
in the title role. See how he goes as a pontiff.
Now, before we get to Bond, and we are going to get to Bond, but before we get there, in our regular segment of the show, What Your Kids Are Watching, we tried to find something that was spy-related. We couldn't. We failed in that attempt. So instead, we're going to serve up Horrible Histories and its sister series, Horrible Science, which are popular ABC3 programs. We're sure they've got some kind of spy link, but we haven't been clever enough to work it out. So instead, we're just going to talk about these programs, which your kids, if they watch them, will learn a lot of undeniably disgusting but accurate facts about the human body and the human race. Oh, and there's a potential for them to learn one clear spiritual truth.
Viewers may like to know that all the names in the following sketch are genuine Victorian names. Good day.
Right, settle down. Mr. Butler isn't here today, so I'll be taking the register. Now, I don't know any of you, so be sure to call out when you hear your name. Raspberry lemon. Lettuce burger. Bovril. I'm sorry, I think I must have picked up a shopping list.
No, miss, those are children's names. They're not answering because they're off sick.
Bovril and raspberry. Honestly, Christian names have got really weird since Victoria became queen.
I should say so. Mark, I've heard about Horrible Histories. I've never actually watched it. But what's up with Horrible Science?
Oh, Horrible Science is a spin-off. It's basically both series of television programs are based on books, okay? So great best-selling children's books. And Horrible Histories covers that sort of periods of history where in which kids can learn sort of disgusting facts about different civilizations.
What's the appeal of all this? What's the attraction with the kid? What are they doing?
Well, okay, of the two people in this studio that actually have children, I know we both do,
oh, this
right?
Is a quiz, okay,
yeah,
yes.
Okay, yeah. Who has three young boys? Yeah, not you, right.
You, okay, you're the answer.
I'm telling you now that kids, particularly boys, love anything that basically involves the word bottom and something disgusting, okay?
Yeah.
There's actually a term for this. It's called fecal fancy.
The things you learn on the big picture.
There you go. Okay.
First week on air on Hope, fecal, whatever you said.
So here's a television series, basically Horrible Histories and, in fact, Horrible Science, based on this whole concept of fecal fancy.
Move on.
I am. And it's just the idea that kids love the disgusting, okay? And so they love that sort of repulsive thing. They can laugh about it. And what somebody has done is taken an educational TV model and married it with that. And now they get to be disgusted at the same time and yet learn.
But it's like all ages disgusting, I take it.
Yeah, actually, I was disgusted.
So is it all just history and science, like, you know, making horrible fun of all of those things? Or is there something greater that can be taken out of Horrible Histories and Horrible Science?
Well, for a start, I mean, kids are going to learn stuff. Okay, so that
right
is
on.
Actually really quite good. I mean, if you think about it, look, every parent out there has sat down with the homework and struggled through with their kids saying, okay, now, what year did the first fleet arrive? 1720. No, 1725. No, and you know, it's difficult. But like what I like, there was one particular one in Horrible Histories where my boys learnt that Tutankhamun was buried in an underground tomb for 3,000 years, making Tut the undisputed worldwide hide-and-seek champion. You know, and by putting a joke next to it,
yeah,
the kids pick that up and enjoyed it and keep it, okay? So that's one of the benefits. But there's actually a spiritual benefit to this too. And I know this is going to sound strange. Well, it's not... It's not aimed at in the series, okay?
As so, in the show's not intending to do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, both Horrible Histories and Horrible Science are not aiming to give a spiritual goal. They just handle religious stuff pretty much the same way they handle any other history. But what they do in the series is to underline something which I really want my kids to learn, that history is basically horrible. That if you actually look back, you see that human beings are pretty faulted and pretty conniving and pretty deadly to each other and pretty dangerous all around. In fact, are pretty corrupted. You know, and so you just cannot watch episodes of this without actually learning along the way that kids, you know, kids will pick up along the way that human beings have a fault and it needs to be fixed. We are biased towards horrible histories.
If you are biased towards Horrible Histories, you can watch it daily on ABC3, and you can also catch Horrible Science every Monday at 5:15 p.m. And despite the stomach-turning, churning content, Mark, that you've been talking about, it's only rated G, which I'm presuming is for generally gruesome.
That's right. Actually, coming up on the show, speaking of generally gruesome, we actually have a bunch of Bond stuff coming up. We've got some soundtrack stuff to play with. We've also got the first Bond film and the latest Bond film, not to mention the Bond gadgets you really need now. Welcome back to the show, and this week we've got our soundtrack episode. Now, if you actually haven't heard of soundtrack before because you're new to the program, basically it's how we look at one of the soundtracks that sits underneath the film and discuss how great it actually is. So it's Bond week.
We basically just pick cool songs from movies and play them and talk about them.
From 1964, one of the ultimate Bond songs. It was actually composed by John Barry, and apparently when Shirley Bassey first heard the opening music for these titles of this particular Bond film, she said she loved it so much that she would agree to sing it no matter what the lyrics were. The lyrics hadn't been written yet. Crazy Shirley, could have got herself in trouble there, didn't. Anyway, she went on to record the theme songs for Diamonds Are Forever and Moonraker based on her success with this particular song. Her raunchy rendition has become so synonymous with Bond movies that this is the song that people think of when they think of Bond soundtracks. I give you Goldfinger.
A cold finger beckons you to enter his web of sin, but don't go in. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. The kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. Golden words he will pour in your ear, but his lies can't disguise what you feel. The kiss of death from Mr. Goldfinger. Pretty girl, beware of this heart of gold. This heart is cold. He loves only gold. Only gold. He
seriously, Shirley Bassey could probably hurt someone with that last note.
Wow. We should have just sung it.
Okay. With the latest 007 mission dominating the big screen this week, we thought a fitting way to cover the longest running franchise in cinema history was to go back to where it all began. A little cottage on the... No, actually. 53
it was a
years
delightful
ago,
time.
James Bond shot onto our screens in 1962 with Dr. No. Ben's jumped in his... You've just been dying to do that.
And it might... I may continue to... Sorry, keep going.
If you continue to do that during the show, that will be a hoot. Thanks.
Yeah, it won't cease to get funny. Please continue.
It won't interrupt at all. Ben's jumped into his... Ben has donned his bulletproof tuxedo, jumped into his Aston Martin, and taken a trip back to the birth of Bond on screen to spy out what was the same, what was different, and what we can learn about our changing tastes as Bond watchers.
James Bond, 007. Licensed to kill whom he pleases, where he pleases, when he pleases. From the elegant club rooms of Mayfair to exotic island night spots.
Jump up, jump up.
Good evening. Who pays you?
You.
Tell us.
A strange adventure of intrigue, treachery, and love.
Mark, going back to the first James Bond where 007 gets introduced to us in Dr. No, and it's a pretty great trip back in time to check out what happened when it, where it all began. And
I think you just probably celebrated because it was black and white.
No, it wasn't. It's in colour.
Oh!
It's in colour. I also thought it was in black and white. Maybe we just see posters of always in black and white. It's definitely in colour.
Because they could, after they'd spent all of that money on the film, they couldn't afford colour posters.
So they just only shelled out for black and white. If you don't know the story, it's a pretty simple one for a Bond adventure. James Bond has to go off to Jamaica because one of his fellow agents is killed, and in this sequence straight out of the titles. And then James Bond, when he's in Kingston, Jamaica, which is basically where the whole film is set, it's not a globe-trotting adventure.
Okay, so he's not like jumping country to country to
no,
country.
No, he's not. And so from there on in, he gets involved with the title character, Dr. No, who through the movie
sounds
is
a fairly negative character.
He's one of those evil geniuses that you tend to get in Bond, we continue to get in Bond movies. But he's called a Chinese gentleman, but he's played by an American actor with, he's got some makeup on, and there's some things about him that
he's
are...
He's not actually Chinese.
That are faintly Chinese, but no, he's not Chinese.
No, as Chinese as the chopsticks he's handing. But, that's
but apart from that kind of stuff that you might laugh at, and there are plenty of other things that you might have a snicker at, but it's really quite a strong, solid spy movie, and a really, I think a really great introduction to 007.
So what do we learn from going back that far about
we learned plenty
James.
Of stuff. For example, that there's so much that we've come to know about James Bond that started right in the beginning. Everything from that theme song that we played a little bit earlier in the show, not Goldfinger, but the actual James Bond theme.
You mean the actual sequence with the like the moving circle?
Yeah, so
Bond
in the titles, you get the music, the theme, but you also get that graphic where you see James Bond in silhouette introduced down the barrel of a gun, and that happened in the first one. You get also this kind of other, the funky silhouette titles that became very synonymous with James Bond. That's also right
at
the start.
Did they kick off with Bond girls as well?
Bond girls in there. Most famously, Ursula Andress, who's got one of the most memorable bikinis in cinema history. That I'm not going to go into detail. I'm just saying
there's probably not much detail to go into.
You've probably seen this shot around the place. And anyway, that was Ursula Andress. Yes, there are Bond girls. And James Bond, in the scene where he is introduced, he's playing cards. He's in a tuxedo. He's flirting with the ladies. He's got the one-liners. He's a winner. And he also gets straight
into... The drink?
The drink shows up a little bit later. So the shaken, not stirred martini does turn up. He drives an Aston Martin. He has the same gun. He has all the smooth moves and that kind of gear going on in this initial Dr. No. It was all there from... So much of it was there from the beginning.
Oh, well, what's different then? I mean, why didn't they just run the same film every year ago? Now it's Dr. Yes.
I would love to see Dr. Yes. I really like Dr. No.
It's a very permissive age.
Be hanging out for the sequel. I think the biggest difference with what we've come to expect what we've come to expect from Bond films, I'll be interested to talk to you later in the show about Spectre and whether Spectre serves up what we've come to expect, which is, and as we just talked about quickly before, the globetrottingness of James Bond. You expect him to visit pretty much every country in the world during one of his films.
So we're not satisfied with him being stationary anymore.
No, and so that doesn't happen in Dr. No. And what we also don't get is as much violence and as many action set pieces. So you do get car chases, and you get those one-liners like they're on their way to a funeral as a car goes off a hill and that kind of stuff. But there's just it's not as reliant on those kind of elements as has become the fashion in James Bond movies increasingly. And
so
also
from
the
your
same
perspective from now, it looked tame?
It does look tame. It definitely looks tame. And some of that is because of when it was made. But there's also a conservatism to what's used in the film that I really quite liked, and how restrained it actually was in many of its departments. And it got me thinking about me as a viewer and what I've come to, not just what I've come to expect in James Bond, but what James Bond has been delivering to us as audiences. So I was thinking about how we've become desensitized to all the stuff that gets served up in movies like James Bond now, where we just expect more and more and more and more and more because we've been getting more and more and more and more. And I don't think we necessarily stop to register, why do we need this to entertain ourselves?
Well, Dr. No stars Sean Connery, Ursula Andress, and Joseph Wiseman. And it's rated PG, is available in all kinds of shapes and sizes, from individual DVD,
or Blu-ray. DD.
A new format, DD.
DD. It's much smaller than DVD. We don't waste time with video.
Or Blu-ray to the entire Bond back catalogues is available in a box set. So pretty much you could have something small or large, whatever shelf space you've got available.
Now, the big picture is all over the place, including Facebook and Twitter. We're often down the street and on buses and things, but we're also on Facebook and Twitter. And this week
we may be putting your bins out this week. Yes, if you want the big picture, we'll be there.
That's right. As we're putting your bins out, what you could do is hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. Let us know what your favorite Bond moments are. Everything from favorite like car chases to gadgets to scenes to movies or even your favorite Bond. Let us know, and we're going to share it with everybody in the coming weeks.
Especially if you've got a bin night that we need to be aware of.
A Bond bin night.
Coming up on the show, we've still got a stack of things, but particularly Spectre. We're holding out to tell you all about the latest Bond film and those top five Bond gadgets we think should be in your drawer today. Welcome back, and we're looking at the press record segment. Now, for the newbies amongst you, press record is where we basically take the pressure off us. Actually, normally we would do that. And what we would do is we take a sort of recorder out and get some wisdom from you guys. But every now and again, we get to do something that's quite special and fun for me and terrifying for Ben.
This is that segment where you make me look like a chump when you test me on...
You got it.
Yeah, I remember this. Explain to everyone what we're about to do and when I look like an idiot.
So you're a fan, obviously you, the ubiquitous viewer, of spy films and TV shows, just like me. So what I do is I go out and I find all the themes I can think of TV shows and films that specialize in spies, and then I mash them up a bit and play them to Ben, and we all giggle as he tries to get them. So you've got 10 ahead of you. You ready? is it with spy music that has to be funky?
Oh, man, that list was so funktastic, it almost hurt.
Spies move.
In a funky way.
With the grace of a jungle cat.
How do they have so many times, like so much space in their spy boots to have bongo drums all the time? How do they do it, those
seriously,
funky cats?
Yeah, and full string orchestras too.
Okay, you had 10.
We what did have 10.
Number one.
Mate, I nothing.
Number one.
Nothing on number one. What was that?
No, that was 24.
Oh, was that the latest?
It was one of the first micro title openers, okay, in television history, where they just showed something for like 10 seconds and that was the opening titles.
Sure. Didn't get it.
There you go. Number two.
Mission Impossible.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
But and which one?
All of them. They're also Mission Impossible Tastic.
That
I don't know.
The 2000 and it doesn't
of course
matter.
It was.
Okay, right.
Austin Powers was
Austin
the third
Powers
one.
Is number
Mate,
three.
I seem to be chuffing it right
and
here. And then I get
four.
To four. I believe it was Funkalicious.
It was indeed.
From the TV show Funkalicious.
No, look, it was the Professionals.
Oh, right, yeah?
And Bodie, Doyle, CI5.
That was that British spy show from probably around the 60s?
Yeah. No, well, 70s.
70s, okay,
what
all
are you
right.
trying to do? Make me look like I'm 50 or
Not
something.
Not to be confused with number five, Get Smart.
Ooh, Get Smart, easy enough.
So
okay.
glad you put that on the list. I love
but
that show.
But number six.
I wanted to say Spooks, that British TV show about spy. No.
It was a British one. Do you want me to give you another go?
This is where I'm starting to look an idiot. Thank you. No, okay. Please tell me.
Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Oh, great film.
Which is an epic film. One of those cases where in which the music actually gets the trepidation of what's going on. Could have been a Jaws film. Could have been a horror film. But it's kind of like that trepidation between trying to find stuff
out. But it's about tinkers and tailors and soldiers and spies.
At least the spies.
And then I'm back again with eight, The Bourne Identity.
No, you missed seven.
Oh, I missed number seven. I've just got question marks. Didn't even write down Funkalicious. I've just got question marks.
Out there, a bunch of would-be female spies are shaking their fist at you right now. That's Alias.
Nah. Oh, I didn't like the show. Who cares? Number eight, but let's move on. The Bourne series. Yeah, that's right. Come at me. Number eight, The Bourne series.
I'm just going to put Ben's personal address on the website. Hey, if you'd like to come around.
And so I can bring out your bin. So The Bourne series, number nine. I was going to say, it really sounded like the Mission Impossible. Then I realized I already had that. So it had to be The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
It was The Man from U.N.C.L.E. It's a brilliant one.
From the movie or from the original TV series?
That was from the original TV series. I'm nothing if I'm not an original.
And that again was around
his earliest.
That was around the 60s or the 70s?
70s.
There you go. And number 10.
Actually, no, I'm wrong. 60s.
Number 10, I think, 62? Was from the remake of the original Funkalicious TV series.
Look, it was probably the best cartoon series about spies on TV today. Archer. Okay, it's an adult cartoon.
Yeah, can't recommend
adult
it for
cartoon,
the kids.
Ladies and gentlemen.
For the adults.
Yeah,
speaking of which,
of
moving
one.
On for the adults, we're now about to get to that part of the show where we finally talk about Spectre.
Finally.
Here it is. On a James Bond edition, we're up to the 24th official outing on the screen of James Bond in Spectre. And he's not the only one making a comeback. The actual Spectre organization is back. They're the evil organization that's headed up by Ernst Stavro Blofeld. Awesome name.
You had no authority. None. Mexico City. What were you doing there?
I was taking some overdue holiday.
So what's going on, James? They say you're finished.
What do you think?
I think you're just getting started.
Magnificent, isn't she? 0 to 60 in 3.2 seconds. A few little tricks up her sleeve.
Do one more thing for me.
What do you have in mind?
Make me disappear.
Hey, which is what Bond does to basically half of New Mexico City. Okay.
Yeah,
at the beginning of the film. Yeah, basically he starts blowing things up there because he's been following the death wish of M. Now, I don't think this is a giveaway, but for those people who haven't seen Skyfall,
the last Bond film?
Yeah, Judi Dench dies, okay?
Yeah, that's right. Not a spoiler. Everyone knows that.
You
okay.
can't sell $1 billion worth of movie tickets and people not generally pick that up.
So Bond's a grieving spy in this one?
He is, and he's
basically been a grieving spy the last couple of movies, hasn't he, really?
He's actually been showing a deeper side. We'll get on to that in a second.
Okay.
But basically, Bond finds his way through to Mexico City. He's chasing a link, which Judi Dench, M, has died, giving him the fallout leads, though, to his suspension, okay? And not unusual for Bond to get suspended. He tends to get suspended in his second film.
Doesn't play by his own rules.
Damn
that license to kill 007.
Yeah, that's it. Well, in fact, the entire 00 division is facing the axe.
Egad, man.
Thing. I know. And so what's happening is that there's this new breed of bureaucrats who've come in.
Bureaucrats.
Nothing raises Ben's temperature more than bureaucrat word.
I'm just shaking my fist at the screen thinking about it.
Anyway, these guys basically say, hey, Do we need operatives, or could we just have drones? Do we need people with fancy spy cars, or could we sell them maybe just more cameras in the sky?
Have 24 previous movies proved nothing to you bureaucrats? Well, apparently we need these operatives.
They miss the films.
Okay, now is there, now we talked about Dr. No earlier in the show.
So very quickly, yes. So what basically happens is that they suspect that the best way to deal with the security thing in the world is to create one uber security organization, bringing all security organizations together, and it'll be a really safe idea if this organization controls all information. And yes, as you sort of suspect, the people behind this are actually Spectre, the criminal organization.
The special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion.
Only you know that acronym.
Mate, that turned up in Dr. No.
Yeah, well,
Spectre was there and informed me of that's what the name was. So we talked about Dr. No earlier in the show, and I'd said that that was a much more pared back Bond expedition. Is this the latest Spectre, what we've come to expect more from the modern day Bonds?
Yeah, look, it is a little more angsty than what the previous, you know,
because
Bond history has been. Not so much that, because Bond is starting to question himself. Okay, so this film, in short, is really about Bond and all the people who've died along the way. In fact, from the opening titles.
You mean along the way, as in the last couple of Bond outings with Daniel Craig as Bond, so Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, and Skyfall. You mean, are these all kind of linked together now?
Yeah, there's one...
Well, they have been up until this point.
Yeah, there's this one overarching storyline that sits behind Spectre, this organisation that has been behind everything terrible. And in fact, Christoph Waltz turns up as Blofeld, and when
he's a great actor, Christoph Waltz,
he is fantastic.
And
this is possibly not the best performance he's ever done.
No, that's very diplomatic.
Thank you. I'm nothing if I'm not nothing. Anyway, so I'll move on.
So he's not so great as Blofeld.
No, look, to be honest, I don't think he's the most villainous villain we've ever had. He's a great actor, but there's something a little off on it. Anyway, the long and the short of it is he's apparently responsible for every bad thing that's ever happened to Bond. The death of his stepfather, he's somehow implicated in the death of his parents, the death of his girlfriend, the death of M, the death of his budgie when he was 9. All of these deaths, you know, he claims responsibility for. It was me, he says.
So riddle me this, Mark Hadley. I've got two questions for you. How do you feel about Spectre as the movie overall? And it sounded to me a little bit like Spectre is boiling down to revenge. Is that right? And if so, are they raising in Spectre the kind of moral challenges that go on in the life of a spy? I think that was three questions.
That was. I'm just taking notes now.
Yeah, yeah. What was the movie like? Is it about revenge, and what's going on with the morality?
Okay, well, first off, it is going to be very, very hard for Spectre to make the sort of money that Skyfall made, basically because Skyfall was so good.
Not as good as Casino Royale.
I know you're a Casino Royale fan, but look, the digits on ticket sales says that Skyfall was better.
Okay.
There you go. Anyway, I feel like this is more like Quantum of Solace again. There's all the elements of Yana.
Yawn.
There's all the elements of a Bond film, and it's okay, but it's kind of a bit forgettable.
Okay.
Okay, so that's the first thing. But the interesting thing is that Bond actually reaches that point where he starts, even though it's a revenge film, I'm going to get you back, that's where he starts morally. But he gets to the point where he's starting to ask himself, is there really any point to this? And in fact, one of the key characters actually says to him, Madeline, who's the sort of the female love interest, the Bond girl for this particular film, she says, you know, why do you do this? And he says, I'm not sure if I really had a choice. And she says to him, you know, I think you're wrong. We always have a choice. And Bond comes to the point where he realizes, spiritually, we do have a choice. You know, we don't have to keep doing this to ourselves. It's just because I started doing this doesn't mean I can't stop. Now, any Bond film that actually tells James it's okay to put the gun down is all right in my books, because it's the one that actually starts to make us think just a little bit more like what it would be like to be a spy, and that kind of comes back to us. We don't want to celebrate some guy who just runs around shooting everything that moves. It's actually kind of good for him to actually behave like a human being and remind us that we have a choice, because many people hide their entire lives around the idea of I'm just doing what I have to do. I don't really have much of a choice in the matter. No, I mean, you don't have to do the job you do. You don't have to be with the people that, you know, that are dragging you down. And also, you don't actually have to live a life opposed to God. You can choose to be different.
All right. So it sounds like you're a bit underwhelmed by Spectre. But if you're a James Bond fan, I dare say you're already racing out of the house to get your tickets for Spectre. It does star Daniel Craig and Christoph Waltz at cinemas from Thursday. It's not awful.
It's not awful.
And it's rated M?
It's rated M.
Rated M, showing all over the place. A big supporter of our show is Insights magazine and website. Go to insights.uca.org.au because they run heaps of great reviews on all the latest releases, also from a Christian perspective. So if you want a different Christian perspective on the latest releases, such as Spectre, go to Insights and check it out. Russ Matthews is putting down his thoughts on that movie, probably as we speak, Mark. They're going on the website, so go and check it out at insights.uca.org.au.
And still to come, what would Jesus say to James Bond? Come back after the break and we'll tell you.
Welcome back. Now, James Bond has had plenty of conversations. Many of them involve the ladies and some suggestive comments, and he's had many with bad guys. Usually when the bad guy's explaining their plan for world domination and providing Bond just enough time to work out how he's going to escape their clutches. But one chat we've not seen the super spy ever have is with one of the most discussed people ever, Jesus. I reckon that would be a ripper. Jesus and James Bond
despite
having a chat.
Despite the many episodes that are in the Middle East, not once have we seen him talk with Jesus.
Now, here on The Big Picture, the Bible Society Australia's CEO and social commentator Greg Clark regularly joins us for a segment we like to call What the Bible Has to Say, and it's what the Bible has to say about a certain topic, and Greg fills us in with those details. This week, we gave Greg a slightly different challenge. We said to Greg, can you bring us what Jesus would have to say to James Bond?
Why not say, as some slanderously claim that we say, let us do evil, that good may result? Well, their condemnation is just, says Romans chapter 3, verse 8. I happen to own a few first editions of James Bond novels. I know this may not be cool to the generation who grew up only on the films. Perhaps you didn't even know that before the films, these stories were in fact books. It's hard to stay across all your popular culture facts, but in the case of Bond, it's important. I enjoyed them as books, where the British wit shines and the preposterous storylines are fun to imagine. In the books, James Bond is a more humane character than the arrogant womaniser who has made the films so popular. When they came to the screen, Bond became a caricature, designed to shock and delight the audience with little of the hand-wringing over morality and meaning and loneliness that we see in the books. The problem of the character of James Bond has become more and more obvious as the franchise has lumbered its way into the 21st century. To start with, Bond is clearly about the most sexist man you could find. He uses women and views them as less valuable than he should. He admires them, but there's nothing there resembling love or care. Furthermore, Bond is an elitist, conscious of class and used to privilege. He wants the best of the best for himself, and anyone else is a servant or expendable. Compared with the beautiful, status-shattering acceptance of Jesus Christ, Bond's world is one where the rich get richer and the poor help them to get there. It might be said that Bond's redeeming feature is that he is out to secure justice, to make sure the bad guys get caught and the great British Empire remains secure. But even here, the ends certainly don't justify the means. Justice at any cost is not the Christian way. Unless the cost is the one borne by the suffering servant without harming others. One author has suggested that the James Bond books are written to proclaim a particularly British kind of morality, that the only unforgivable sin in the books is the one of sloth, of not putting in your utmost stiff upper lip, it's only a flesh wound effort. But if that's true, well, Bond still misses the mark, because it isn't our works that save us, but Christ's works. And if our works include killing people, sexual immorality and betrayal, it doesn't matter how hard we try, we're still in desperate need of the grace of a forgiving God if we're to save our skin. It's something James Bond just doesn't seem to grasp. But we must remember, even for Bond there is hope, because if he did grasp his need for grace, God would welcome him with open arms.
Bible Society CEO's Greg Clark. And also, speaking of Bible Society, the next edition of Eternity, in fact, the current edition, what am I saying, the November edition of the Eternity newspaper.
It's out, Mark, it's out.
It's out, it's there, it's heating up your pew even as we speak. It actually has an article on that sort of like the tension between works and deeds and what it actually does to our heart. It's called The Dark Heart of the Middle East, and I know this because I wrote it.
Already going to raise that point.
Yes, at some point I was going to let that go. But the truth is that it's a great piece on Time Magazine and CNN reporter Michael Ware, who's actually created a new documentary called Only the Dead.
You interviewed him for this, didn't you?
Yeah, about his experiences as 7 years as the bureau chief chief in Baghdad. Okay, and so he actually has a great opportunity to talk to us about the problems of the human heart. And interestingly, he's not a man who would claim any particular Christian faith, but what he has come to the conclusion is there's something wrong with us and we need something to fix it, which from a Christian perspective, we go, yep, that's definitely the case. And now...
Mark, it's that time again.
Top five. I look forward to this every week. Seriously, I do. This week, never more so.
Never more so.
Never more so than possibly next week.
But if this is your first time joining us on The Big Picture, because this is our first time on air on Hope on a Sunday night between 8 and 9 p.m., this is the point in the show where we do rattle off a top five list. And it does what it says in the title. We do a top five and we just pick whatever we want to talk about this particular week from the history of movies. This week, because we're doing our Bond show,
it's the Bond show.
Bond gadgets, right? But yes. Not just Bond gadgets. We thought we'd narrow it down a little bit further into Bond gadgets that we really like to have right here, right now in our real life.
Five.
Mark, these are honorary mentions in point number five. Bagpipe flamethrower from The World Is Not Enough.
And I can't believe you didn't make that one of your choices.
It's because Bond doesn't actually use it. So see it in a scene where you're in Q. Q is the guy who creates...
The quartermaster.
That's right. He's the gadget master in the Bond universe. I mean, his massive workshop in The World Is Not Enough from 1999, you see a guy in the background with a bagpipe flamethrower. So if you're ever at a Highland Fling and you need to start a fire, bang.
If you are ever at a barbecue for Scottish people... You could play the music.
You'd be a massive hit.
Whilst lighting the barbecue.
But that is not nearly as memorable or as vital in your life as a safecracker copying machine. That's right, Mark. A safecracker copying machine. You remember it from that scene in On Her Majesty's Secret Service from 1969, which is the only Bond film that starred the Australian actor George Lazenby, who has the amazing... what's the right word for this?
Privilege?
Privilege of being the only actor to play Bond in one movie and one movie alone.
I'm starting to feel it was the safecracker...
Maybe it was a safecracker copying machine. So he's breaking into a safe, and what does he need to do when he breaks into the safe? He needs to get the documents out, and he needs to send them through to head office, and he needs a copying machine at the same time. Wouldn't that be great to have in real life? And that's why it's at number five, okay. But not nearly as useful as number four.
Four.
You've been at a local swimming pool, and you've been trapped. And you just couldn't break free. Your arms...
Normally by a conversation, but please.
But on this occasion, you've been somehow waylaid by, I don't know, say you've been handcuffed or something.
Okay.
Similar to the situation experienced by James Bond, played by Roger Moore, in Live and Let Die from 1973. Now, unlike you, I don't think you've been trapped in a pool of sharks, but that's what was happening with James Bond.
Right. There was one element.
No, at your local swimming pool, no sharks. And on this occasion, that's what James Bond is up against. How is he going to get away, I hear you ask? Well...
James Bond
really knows what time it is. He wears very nice watches.
Oh, yeah.
And like, on this occasion...
Like the Timex and
that, yeah, not that we're into product placements and not suggesting that anyone goes and buys these products, but you might want to go and look for a Submariner watch because not only is it work underwater, that's great when you're in a pool of sharks, it also has a buzzsaw. A buzzsaw on the face of your watch.
Last time I was at the pool, I really needed a buzzsaw.
You're trying to do two things at once, right? You're trying to multitask and you think, I could go for a swim and knock up a set of cupboards. Who hasn't been in that situation before?
Sorry, I'm just choking on that idea.
I think Bond on this occasion was ahead of his time. So in Tomorrow Never Dies, 1997 film, that was the second film that Pierce Brosnan played James Bond.
Yep.
He had a mobile phone. And not only did he have a mobile phone, Mark, he had a mobile phone
something more about this. Yeah.
That has a stun gun, electric lock opener, a fingerprint scanner, an antenna lock pick, and a BMW remote control. Not that I'm condoning going out and buying BMWs.
You want this now?
I want this now. It's like a Swiss Army knife as a phone.
It's the iPhone 6.
What? What do you mean?
The iPhone 6. You can unlock your car with the iPhone 6. You can actually get a thumbs. It's got a thumb fingerprint scanner in it.
Does it?
There is an app for that.
Then this is even greater because there's a Bond gadget in real life right here, right now. I should have put that at number one.
You could have had it today.
As you do your product placements. A special, extra special mention goes to, also from Live and Let Die, a clothing brush communicator. So as Bond was brushing his clothes,
he could speak back to
M in head office.
You can do that with your iPhone 6 too.
I'm sure you can.
It's not as effective for taking lint off, but if you get enough static built up, you just move it very fast.
But not nearly as necessary as this.
Two.
I know, Mark, you have been in this situation where there is a body of water in front of you and there is no way across it. You've got the family in the car. You've got up to the edge of the water and you think, my goodness, I really need to get the other side. We live in Sydney Harbour. There's a couple of bridges over it, but there are so many points that you want to get from across
there. Every time I come to the harbour tunnel and it's completely blocked, I would like to get
Some other way. You would want what is coming in at number two from The Spy Who Loved Me in 1977, a submarine car. I almost picked from Octopussy in 1983, where Bond is escaping from some henchman's like world domination plans and getting away from their evil HQ. And by way of doing that, he must have been in a swamp because he was in a submarine vehicle, but it was in the shape of a crocodile.
Not as useful. Can you imagine having a submarine shark vehicle or you just basically you'd turn up at the beach and somebody would shoot you?
One.
A jetpack.
Here I go.
That's not you, it's jamming to be James Bond.
Just imagine me.
What this is you know where I am now?
I'm in a Sydney train station.
And Mark, you're exactly right. That is the sound of the future, my friend. Top five Bond gadget you need in real life has to be unquestionably jetpack from Thunderball.
You get in the train very quickly.
Yep. We're now at the end of the show. What I'm about to do is rush out and go online and find myself a jetpack.
Hey, well, while you're doing that, coming up next week, dib, 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 munch, munch, munch. We've watched new teen comedy, Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse.
Oh, yeah, we did watch that, yes.
Scout's Guide to the Zombie Apocalypse. Yep. Okay, if you didn't pick that up, I just want to be really clear. And we actually ask a real scout leader and scouts what they would do if brain dead brain eaters invaded.
Also next week, Julia Roberts and Nicole Kidman lead a Hollywood remake of an Oscar-winning foreign film about this painful intersection between personal and legal issues.
Plus much, much more, including the top five sports that I never thought I would want to try, but movies convinced me to do it.
Can't
basically,
wait.
Probably should.
McKechnie, Ben McKechnie, I'll see you next week.
Still Mark Adley, see ya.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.